Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Wild swings and stranger things. Bond yields tumble, negative yielding debt grows. Most likely reason for a recession is revealed and... more listener questions answered. All this and much more on episode number 624 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Andrew Horowitz here, and I am back from South Africa. What an amazing country. Just a beautiful, beautiful place. Really hard to get to. I mean, it takes hours to get there, but I got to tell you something. The entire trip, from the aspect of understanding more about their culture, understanding about what's going on down there, getting a real good introduction to their wines, their food, their people, the economy, fabulous. And not to mention, of course, the wonderful safari that we went on to and had some time visiting and doing and going. And really, I can't say enough about it. Just an amazing place. One of the things that really struck me as really kind of fascinating was the idea that there is such a divergence, a separation of the rich and the poor. Very striking, much different than you see in other places that I've been to, where there is, as you're driving, just beautiful homes and beautiful scenery, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, something called a township, or I guess you can call it a shanty town. This is primarily in Cape Town, where there are people who have come to try to enhance their lives and make a better place for themselves, and now all of a sudden, here we are, with no jobs, because it's about a 30% unemployment rate. I think it's exactly 26.5% unemployment rate for the area. And right down the road again, you have some beautiful homes and shops and stores and places and beautiful scenery. And then again, you see miles and miles of these shanty towns. Great deal of affluence, a great deal of suffering. And unfortunately, it doesn't look like that's going to get any better anytime soon. There's nothing really in the works that can be done. Their economy, running at about a 1.3% overall GDP rate. The rand, their currency, is very weak. They have a lot of problems there. The government is trying to get on better footing after the changeover they had in the 1990s with the whole apartheid and the breakup of that and the changeover. There's a lot of things going on there that hopefully they'll be able to straighten out, get right, at least get on track. But it is kind of an interesting place overall. I did visit Cape Town. I went to Johannesburg. Went to an area called Hoedspruit, which I think is the right pronunciation, which is a private game reserve outside of Kruger National Park. And again, there was this very surreal moment that I had there when I'm able to take advantage of a very strong dollar and get the top hotels for $100 a night. And at the same time, looking around at all these different poor areas. Yeah, I was glad. I'm happy that I was able to give back to the economy. But it looks as though this, you know, with all the fighting that's going on, a bit of a rioting going on. As a matter of fact, as I was leaving Cape Town to come back to the U.S., going to the airport, driving down the road, we had to be rerouted because there were a lot of riots going on, a lot of gang violence happening in these townships. And we had to ride right past one of them, and they made us turn around because all the roads around these townships were closed down. So what happened was that we had to, you know, take another 20-minute ride around. But the point is not so much my inconvenience. The point is what's going on down there that's causing all these riots. And it's this abject poverty, lack of a potential for a job. And when you have no hope, and you have no future, these kind of things happen. We know that. Now, let me just give you a little bit of insight into after I left Johannesburg, after I left Cape Town, I went over to the safari, went to this private game reserve. Incredible pampering once again. If you haven't heard about or seen what goes on in South Africa on these safaris, particularly these private game reserves, pretty amazing. The hotel staff was just, it wasn't a hotel, it was a house. We got the owner's house and a private chef and all this. And you want to say, oh, wow, well, yeah, well, it doesn't cost that much. It's not cheap, but it doesn't cost as much as you would think because the dollar's so strong. Went on these daily game drives, saw the amount of animals, two kills, a lion eating a kudu, leopard with a recently killed impala up a tree. Great pictures. And it really, I thought it really took me back to basics. Really understanding the land, understanding what's happening with the outside the city, outside of the regular daily process of working and going and doing and all the things that we have to do and the raw nature of nature, the raw aspect of what it's all about. Again, can't recommend it highly enough. The destination overall, whether, you know, all the way down to South Africa from Cape Town to Hoedspruit, the wines were fantastic. Oh, terrific. We visited through the wine country and visited, I think, about 6 or 7 different vineyards. The Pinotage and the Reds were pretty good. Now, I'm not a wine connoisseur by any means. I'm not a wine connoisseur. But for what they were, I thought they were really good. They have the Chenin Blanc, which is a wine, a grape that they is something they really specialize in on the white side. That was good. I'm not a white wine guy, but it was good. And of course, I tasted some really interesting meats. Kudu, wildebeest. What else did I have? I had a warthog, ostrich. Pretty good. I've had some game before in the States, and I always found it to be, well, gamey. You know, that kind of rough flavor. But there, it was delicious. The wildebeest was fantastic. You know, what does it taste like? Well, I don't know. It tastes like a steak. It tastes like a really good steak. Like the filet portion, filet mignon, but with more flavor popping out of it. I don't know if it was the preparation or what it was, but it was fantastic. So, great time. Glad to be back. Still getting adjusted to some of the 6-7 hour time differential and the jet lag and all that because it's a long flight. It's about a 21-hour flight from Miami with a breakup and layover in London. So while I'm gone, what's happening? Things seem to be getting a little bit wonky back on this side of the equator. While I was gone, it looked like there was a lot of the same old that was going on, the back and forth with the trade war. I was tracking, of course, all that. You know, it's nice, no matter where you are in the world, if you have Wi-Fi and you have internet access, pretty much you're in your office. So I was able to, even though I was away and the time differential, we had Wi-Fi everywhere. So it was really easy to be plugged in the whole time, which is good and bad. But bond yields plummeted around the world. Stock markets were just moving violently. Just, I mean, crazy volatility there that moved right into this week as well. We saw a 300-point up, an 800-point down, a 300-point up, another 300-point up on the end of the week. So, I mean, by the end of the week, the crazy moves over the last 2 weeks. We've also had China's economy slowing down precipitously. Europe's a hot mess, right? I mean, what's going on in Europe is out of control. The whole idea that they're able to even solve their problems with papering it over that we've been talking about for years and years and years is obviously coming to an end point here. Central banks are amped up all around the world, providing more stimulus. And we saw just crazy moves. I mean, just incredible moves on bond yields, not only around the world, but here in the U.S. as well. And I started thinking about all the things that are going on and this whole idea that, oh, the central banks are going to solve the problem. They're going to, you know, they're going to cut rates again and things are going to be great because they're going to apply more stimulus, more liquidity for the markets and all that. But I started thinking about this and this whole idea of, you know, what are they telling us? What are they trying to make us believe? And the you know, this whole idea of why are they leading us around like this? The constant headlines. And I started thinking about what's the truth in all this? And, you know, I said, can we handle the truth? Can I handle the truth? Can you handle the truth of what's actually happening around the world that's making all this go on? Not only the volatility, but also what's happening with the central banks, with the negative interest rates, all this. I start thinking, you know, can we handle the truth? And do we want to even listen to it? And what's happening in markets that we're seeing such volatility?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
Yeah, I seriously question whether we can, as investors, really handle the truth. But I figured we got to talk about this. I mean, where am I going with this, right? I mean, what is true anyway? What is the truth? How do we even get to it with the constant barrage of information that's flowing, the opinion, especially these opinions from amateur analysts that we see now cropping up everywhere because we have the access and availability to do it on social media like Twitter and Facebook, and everybody's an expert. Everybody seems to know what they're talking about and have another opinion. And what's happening, as I see it at least, is we're having a warping, just a bending of reality. And it's constant. I mean, it's just it's unchecked. It's pervasive. It's overwhelming. Now you may say, "Well, Andrew, just turn it off. It's almost impossible." Listen, we're talking together here. It's just us. The thing is that it's almost impossible to turn this off because it's everywhere. It's in the news. It's on TV. It's in social media. It's on the internet, it's in advertisements, it's just everywhere that there is this whole need to put together this narrative, this whole idea that we got to push and we got to pull and we got to make sure that everybody's on the same page. So here's a bit of a challenge. I want to challenge all of us to start being more skeptical. Look beyond just the headlines, you know, just kind of go out there and take a look at things. But instead of just absorbing the information from a one sentence view summary, let's go back to some basic logic and principles so that we can come up with a conclusion that is actually much more in line with reality than what is attempted to be shaped by others. And if you have any doubt that there is reality shaping going on, just look at all the things that happened during 2016 to 2018 with regard to the election, Cambridge Analytica, all the things that are going on with Facebook and recording of voices and Google that's going on there and the information that's being sent around and all the analytics that's being put together in order to understand more about what's happening. But then what is the point of all that? If you think about it, why is Amazon capturing all this information on a regular basis? Why is everybody that we work with finding data points about us and saving it? It's not just to have it. It's so they can use it in one way or another, whether it's to sell us more widgets or if it's simply to try to shape us with news that is based on what their advertisers desire to put out there. So I thought, you know, let's just for a second step back and kind of look at this in a different light and recall one of the biggest economic lies that had been, I guess, seeded and propagated over the past, I don't know, last 10 years, 15 years. What is it? Well, it's negative yields. Negative rates and central banks' ability to change the economic cycle. The whole idea that we are no longer going to have economic cycles. What we're going to have instead is a smooth run forever. No longer do we have peaks and troughs. No longer do we have contractions to expansions. No. It's going to be smooth sailing forever because the central banks now know how to control this. They have information that they get in real time and they can really analyze this with their team of economic experts. And the best thing for us is just simply to listen to them. This is an enormous untruth. But what's happening, we're being led to the watering hole and forced essentially to drink the water, whether we like it or not. Drink the water and the idea that negative rates or central banks' abilities are all-knowing, all-powerful, all-abling and enabling of changing market and economic cycles. The idea that this negative interest rates, this experiment can enhance an economy is absolute hogwash. This experiment has completely gone off the rails. I mean, think about what has happened and where this all started. It wasn't supposed to get to this point. If you look back on how the idea was created and why it was created, it was all about taking the excess amount of reserves that were on deposit with central banks and taking those and essentially saying, you know what, banks, if you're going to hold it with us, we usually pay you at, let's say, 0.5% as an example. And you hold it for overnight and short-term interbank issues, and you leave it on deposit with us for excess amounts and all. We don't want that anymore. You know what we're going to do? We're going to cause you some pain. We're going to make you do something. We're going to make you take it out of here and find another home for that money. And what we want you to really do is put it out into the economy. We want you to loan it out, lend it out, give it out there somehow. And you're going to get a higher rate than you get with us, because if you put it with us, you're going to be penalized. And the idea was such that a small little a penalty for keeping the money there would, what would it happen? It would essentially get out into the economy, expand credit. And the more penalty they felt, the more they would opt out of money flowing into the Federal Reserve or the central bank as a reserve positioning and put it out into the real economy. And what's happened is absolutely insane. It has totally morphed. I mean, totally gotten out of control to a point that it's a death trap. The truth? Can we handle this truth? No, I mean, they don't think so, because they want to continue pushing things into the more negative, lower rates, because they want to continue to say that, you know what, this is going to work. Because they're stuck. And here it is. Here's the facts. Here's the truth. We're not being led to the watering hole. No. We are being slowly prodded. We are being pushed toward the economic slaughterhouse. And I have no doubt about this. We're being slow walked. We're being moved into a giant pool of quicksand. And there's no way out. Nobody is going to be able to give us a branch or a rope or some kind of a lift out of this deal. Central banks have and are igniting fires. I don't think there's any question about that. And what they're doing on top of that is, I guess, like pouring gas on the flames, fanning it. And what is that going to do? It's essentially, I'll tell you, here's the bottom line. It's going to burn down the freaking house. And I'm pretty amped up about this, because I was really doing a lot of thinking, had a lot of time on the plane to think about this. I started looking around at all my economic indicators, and I started looking at some of the insights of what's happening with the Fed, the commentary from our Fed, the commentary from the ECB, looking at what they're going to try to do, looking at over the last few weeks how many rate cuts we've seen around the world, and the idea that we're seeing rates on bonds drop so dramatically and deeper into negative territory. About a month and a half ago or somewhere around there, negative yielding debt around the world totaled $15 trillion. $15 trillion. That's not funny. It's a lot of money. Fast forward a few weeks, we're closing in on $17 trillion because rates have been sinking so quickly that more and more are going sub-zero. Who in their right mind would want to purchase bonds where you're guaranteed to lose money over time? If you know anything about interest rates and you know anything about economics and basic investments, do you think that if I propose the idea that you give me $10,000 and I guarantee I'll give you back $9,500 in 10 years from now, that's something that you're going to consider doing? Makes no sense. Now, of course, there's the potential for capital gains where you say, well, if I give you $10,000 now and rates keep on going down, I can make more money on it and I'll move out of it. That is not the way bonds are supposed to work. That is not the process. And the very idea that central banks will allow this continue to even in a way allow it and enhance it is insane. And a lot of people will be thinking, you know, you're right, but we've been talking about this concept of what the central banks have been doing for a while. And, you know, everybody's been talking about this bomb that should have gone off, this economic catastrophe that should have gone off by now, and inflation that should have kicked in with all the monetization of the debt and quantitative easing and all this stuff. It's just not happening. But I want you to think about something. That economic bomb, that time bomb, maybe it hasn't gone off yet. And maybe, I don't know, this time is different. But maybe what's really happening here is that we are working in these experiments in an environment that is too short-minded to really think about what the outcome is. In other words, we're looking at long-term propositions with changes in the economic cycle that don't happen overnight, that filter into the economy slowly but surely, that will eventually change something on the other end. I mean, maybe they know what they're doing. Maybe these experiments are working. But maybe there's another truth. And I ask again, can we handle the truth? Here it is. The only reason, in my opinion, that this bomb hasn't gone off yet is that the fuse is really, really long. It's lit. It's moving along its path. It's sizzling. It's kind of moving at a slow and steady pace. So the bomb is there. The question is, when do we get there and how long is that fuse? We're seeing the smoke from the fuse pretty clearly. I can tell you that much right now. I mean, just look what's happening to the yield curves around the world. As I mentioned, the level of negative yielding debt around the world. Look at the fact of the 30-year treasury. I mean, the 30-year treasury clipped 2% last week. All-time low yield of the U.S. Treasury. I mean, this is not normal. It's not sustainable either. And you know what else? It is not going to end well. I mean, yeah. Governments, politicians, central banks, they're trying their best. They are working overtime. And what are they doing? They're trying to stamp out this fuse. But it keeps burning. You know, it's like one of those trick candles on a birthday cake. You know, keep blowing it out, it lights up again. The first time you saw it was hysterical, right? Look at that. You know, Uncle Joe, he's blowing out the candle. It keeps on lighting back up. You know, finally somebody puts it out with some water and they squeeze it and they stamp. But, you know, what's happening now is that while central banks are blowing, and all they can do is try to blow on this because what do they have? They have words. They really can't do much more. What's happening is that candle keeps igniting. That fuse keeps on going. It's lit, folks. And the question's going to be when Is this all going to come to fruition? When are we going to see the time? But I got to tell you something. I think we're much closer than we've been. The fact that we saw the inversion of the 2-10s last week on the U.S. bonds and the 30-year clip 2%, and we're seeing that there's going to be more stimulus by the ECB, and this rumor at the end of the week that Germany may use some kind of fiscal measure, which is pretty interesting. That's how bad things are. That Germany's going to have to go to some kind of fiscal changes. Something that's going to be very difficult for the EU to take, because all the different countries have different mechanisms. While the Central Bank of Europe manages the entire central banking part, each country is responsible for their own fiscal. And you start messing with that whole arrangement now, once again, another experiment. That's not what was supposed to happen necessarily. And China changing the rules on their lending and how banks can lend and the lending rate structure over the weekend. Things are getting a little dicey. Things are getting a little weird. Now, listen, at the same time, with all that, there's a lot of people. A lot of people coming up with all sorts of excuses about why U.S. yields are plummeting and the levels they're at right now. They're using all sorts of excuses why they're trying to appease their own business biases, their narratives, their beliefs. You know, the old this time is different, as I talked about earlier. And I think about that because maybe I think about it myself, right? I'm thinking, well, maybe I have a bias. Maybe somehow I have a bias in this. And I'm looking maybe to reinforce this narrative of myself. And it's possible that maybe I'm not thinking clearly and I'm looking at this in a weird way. But I think I'm looking at this with a clear historical reference. And I don't believe it's so that I have a... Listen, I'm sure that I have some kind of bias going on here, right? But I can tell you that I don't know and I can't pin on what my ulterior motive would be with the bias. It's just what I clearly see. It's the truth that I see. And I keep asking myself, can we handle this truth? And then again, what's the truth anyway? So let's look back and talk about what the truth is. And let's look at truths that we were fed. We were told to believe. The things that were supposed to be. And all we have to do is go back to 2005 to 2007 to see what I'm talking about here. You know, back then everything was just fine. We had a wonderful economic situation. We had housing growth. We had jobs. We had good employment numbers. We had, everything was growing. Just all rainbows and puppy dogs, right? Everything was fantastic. But at that time, if you remember something, we also had more experiments going on. And these were done in a similar fashion with a different twist. They were done with credit, leverage, borrowing. And at the time, it was done by the banks, and the central banks were just fine with it. They're like, yeah, things look good. Everybody should have a house, no matter if they could afford it or not. And looks like, I'm looking around here. Things are pretty good. We're building some houses, creating jobs, construction is up, things are good. Good stuff. Politicians loved it, as it looked like, this is all they're doing. Good news, and they could put on their resume for the future. Most economists were just trying to be in line with consensus and didn't see the train coming at all. And sell-side analysts, how about them? They are busy. Because what do? Well, they're trying to sell their analysis, right? They're just trying to... Their job is simply just to sell whatever they can. And they had to keep momentum going because the house behind them needs stock prices going up. They need trading. They need action in the markets. They don't want to spook anybody. So they keep a tight lip. That's why we see so many more buy than sell recommendations on stocks. And when you see a hold, it really means a sell. A little bit of a translation process there. Now, back in 2005 to 2007, that approximate range, I'm just using that as a timestamp to consider. What else was going on? We had banks. that were hiding the facts of what was really going on about their balance sheet problems. And then, kerplunk, boom. And what was that also? It was years of a long, slow-burning fuse that pretty much exploded right in most people's faces. Nobody seemed to see it coming. After the fact, it's clear. I knew it. After the fact, everybody said, that makes sense. How could have that worked? But when you're in it, when you're inside the process, it's very difficult to really see it. So what do we rely on? We rely on others to give us that truth. And who is that in these situations here? Well, I'm going to blame the Fed. There's plenty of other blame to go around here. And the Fed acknowledges that they didn't see it coming either. It's very clear they didn't see it coming, because if they did, they would have done something about it. They wouldn't have gone through the process that they did of raising rates and doing all the things they did at the wrong time once again, causing not only a recession, almost a full-on depression on a global scale, not only here because of what our central banks did, but think about all the property bubbles around the world, and the central banks around the world didn't see it either. Or didn't want to see it. Or saw it and couldn't bear to let any of us know about it. I mean, think about this just for a second. The Fed didn't see the problem. At the same time, they had, direct access, not ancillary information and look at the trends. They have direct access to all the data, and they didn't see it coming. It was right there. It was apparent. And it wasn't going away. Why? How? How is that even possible? Fact is, they knew it. They saw it. They didn't want us to know the truth. And it's very simple to understand why, if you understand what they're trying to do. They need to keep sentiment up. They need to keep confidence high in order to keep this massive machine rolling along. And this statement goes for the Fed here, central banks around the world, goes for politicians, goes for governments. It's the machine. You need to keep sentiment high. Now, let me explain something. If things are bad and not going well, but yet at the same time, there's high sentiment, you know what? There may be a really good outcome in the end. On the other hand, if you have things going along okay and sentiment slips and keeps on slipping, that's a sure fire way to have things roll over. Because when you don't have good sentiment, what happens is that people aren't confident in spending and doing and expanding and doing what they do in life. If you don't have good sentiment, if you don't have good confidence as an individual, you're not going to reach out and do things like buy a car, buy a house, buy a washing machine, go out on that vacation, spend that extra money. If you do have the confidence in the future, you're not going to really have that psychological grip that comes over you that will prevent you from doing these things. What's going to end up happening is that this sentiment is so powerful. The psychology behind the idea of keeping confidence up in an economy is so key that that's their job. They can't and won't risk spooking the masses. Even if there is a absolute 100% certainty of a massive correction in markets or in the economy coming, they can't afford to say that. Because what would happen? If they did say that, it would come true. So whether or not it was really going to happen, they would collapse sentiment, causing the cascading effect to be felt throughout the economy. So it's terribly important for them to keep up the looks. They got to keep, doing their thing. They got to have the violins playing as the ship is sinking. They'll keep rearranging the deck chairs as the Titanic is going down just to make it look like, you know what? Things are good. Things are normal. Don't worry about anything. And for God's sakes, don't panic. They want to make sure that we all believe that everything will be fine. Otherwise, this entire house of cards falls down. Because all of this, and I don't say this in a negative manner, it's just a fact. It's all a confidence game. It's all built on the belief that tomorrow will be a better day. And next week will be even better. And next month and next year, everything's going to be better over time. And therefore, I believe in it. And if I believe in it, I'll make it happen. Because I'll reach down in my pocketbook, in my pockets, in my wallet, and I'll spend. But the truth, here we go. China's economic powerhouse is fading with manufacturing and related numbers that are at a 17-year low. Europe continues to slow. In fact, we're seeing a mini meltdown and total collapse in certain areas around the world. We saw Argentina's stock market drop by 40% in one day in the last couple of weeks. Bonds flashing a clear and absolute warning sign. And the Fed looks to me like they're in full panic mode. If you really think about what's going on with the Fed and that twist, turn, and reversal they did back in December, and to where we're going now, where they're talking about further rate cuts, and they'll change the stimulus if they have to, looks like they're in a full-out panic. Investors are pulling out enormous sums of funds from equity mutual funds and ETFs, so it lasts however long, and basically leaving the corporate buyback plans as the fuel for the keeping of stocks propped up. Valuations are questionable. Real estate stocks are doing well and interest rate sensitive, and utilities and gold. Retail stocks are falling off a cliff. So what is the truth here? Well, the truth is there's many truths. The question is, which one are you going to believe? And I don't think you have to be all in or all out on any one particular side, because I think this is a flexible process. But you do have to be disciplined, but not a disciple of any one set of beliefs. Look at the facts and separate that fictional part of it from the truth. Be ready for, I think, any outcome is really what we need to be looking for. But again, be disciplined. Be disciplined. And what do I mean by that? Something we've talked about so many times. But here's my little list of preparation kind of for any kind of outcome right now. Remember something. While I believe, and it looks to me that this is a factual truth, that things are going off the rails here. And I can't tell you the exact timing on this. That's not my job. That's not what I'm looking to do. I need to just look at the future and see something's just not right. And therefore, make appropriate judgment calls on my investments, my clients' investments, and portfolios. That's my job. I'm not necessarily trying to trade on a tick-by-tick basis. Yeah, the TDI Managed Growth strategy, we have more of a active portfolio management. And in there, yes, we'll hedge a little bit stronger and we'll move in and out of things and do some swing trading of stocks and all that. And we'll use some options from time to time. And there's different things that we do inside that strategy that make it a long, short strategy that we can manage moving forward. In our other portfolios, though, we take a much longer approach, a longer view approach to things. And we want to know where things are going to be, let's say 6 months, a year, 2 years out. And now what we're starting to see as of this point right now, that, is there a dynamic change happening? And with that, what are we going to do about it? So as we do, I want to share with you that it's time to get really on your game. It's time to start thinking about, okay, if any of this does happen, and And if I lay out this design and this is something that is going to eventually occur, that fuse will continue to burn and eventually explode this economic time bomb that may make its way back to stocks and turn around bonds or maybe do something to, commodities or whatever it is. We need to have a game plan. So I put down about 12 different points that I think are those that we need to really look at. And things that you can do and actively and proactively have at the ready. And it all starts with very, very simple. It all starts with number one, write down your plan. Number two, act on your plan without hesitation, unless the facts change. Now, of course, you may say, well, Andrew, the facts always change. Well, they do and they don't. I'm talking about the big picture facts. If you see something very substantial change, and it's to the better, and that plan that you wrote down, that design of what you see the future being, whatever that is for you, unless that changes, you don't change your plan, and you act on it. Don't be swayed. Number three, don't be swayed by those with ulterior motives. There are a lot out there and a lot of people out there that will provide you all sorts of information, and you have to ask yourself, okay, what's in it for them? For example, there's a previous guest and someone who's pretty active on social media constantly. When I say constantly, I don't mean like once a day. I mean many times a day, touting the benefits of Tesla. The love affair with Disney. Why? Well, that's what they hold in their portfolio. So they're doing a twofold issue. They're doing one, trying to convince you that it's a good deal. And number two, trying to convince themselves that, yeah, this is good. Look at all these people that agree with me. Therefore, they get this recognition and a feedback loop started. And they feel comfortable with their decision and with the fact that they made the right decision. So when you see these wolves in sheep's clothing, okay, don't be swayed by them. Look, all right, what's your gig here? How do you benefit from my believing in what you're telling me is the truth? Number four, step back. Step way back and look at things from a good distance in order to help you incorporate all the data together. You know, if you have a recipe and you put things together and you put it all together, but you don't mix it right, you're going to be too heavy on salt, too heavy on pepper, garlic. You got to mix it all together, stand back, and look. All right, what is this all telling me? When you have your nose right to the window, right to the window that I'm talking about here is your screen, and you're unable to differentiate all the different things, you're only focusing on one item, or you're looking at a time frame. Number five, a time frame that's too short. Number five is now look at, for investors, want you to look at daily and weekly charts, monthly as well, not 5 minute, not tick charts. If you're a day trader, if you're a scalp trader, okay. I'm not putting you in this category right now because you're going to be able to do it well and hopefully well in any market condition. I'm talking about the investors out there, the long-term investors that are looking to gain wealth. Get your nose out of the screen and only not only deals with the stock charts, but I'm talking about the one point of data as well. When you see that unemployment is X, oh my God, that's the end of it. No, let's look at trends. Let's step back. What's the 6 month trend? What's the 12 month trend? Where are we going with this? Is there a pattern? If it's just a blip, it may be just an aberration. We've talked about that a lot. Number six, think of hedges. Look for exit opportunities. Know your surroundings. Look around. Where are the things that could really trip me up here in my portfolio and in my investing plan? Whether I'm investing for 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, what could really trip up my plan right now? Number seven, take profits and look for oversold opportunities. When you see markets that are going to swing wildly, And if we get into a situation where we do see a deep correction, remember, those don't last forever. Good companies, good sectors, good quality positions should be looked at and looked for and sought out at that point. Number 8, don't be cavalier or a hot dog. It is not the time when you see volatility kick up like this to enter into a mode that you know you can do, you can make. You'll lose your shirt. Number 9, you need to get this "I was right" out of your mind. Nobody cares if you're right besides yourself. Nobody cares if you're wrong besides yourself. You also need to get out the "I know I will be right" out of your mind. That's number 10. Number 9 is get the "I was right" out of our minds. And number 10 is get I know I will be right out of my mind. Because, like I said, we need to be flexible. I talked about that with the first point here. First and second points, you got to be flexible. Doesn't matter if you're right. It matters if, in the long haul, you're making money. So it's not this game of, I did it, and, you know, chest pumping, and it's not the point. Number 11. This is really key. Make sure that the risk in your portfolio is something that will let you sleep at night. I know it's kind of simplistic, but no matter what happens, you want to have a portfolio that's set up in a way that you're able to manage the risk and not panic in or out of anything. When you panic, when you can't sleep, you make bad decisions. So what I want you to think about is that when you set up a portfolio 5 years ago, it may be based on a different set of circumstances that we're seeing now for the next 5 years. Would you have set this portfolio up today? Or would you set the portfolio up that you did 5 years ago the same way as you would today? You need to look at that. You need to look at the risk, the volatility factors. Are you in too heavy in one sector, one stock? Any areas? Are you in too light in another area? Are you balanced? And I think number 12 is also really important when it comes to all of this, wrapping this up in a nice tidy bow, is don't try to get ahead of all this. You got to go with the flow. But at the same time, stay toward the front side of the tide. As a great philosopher, Eminem said, "The truth is you don't know what is going to happen tomorrow. Life is a crazy ride and nothing is guaranteed." And maybe more appropriate, what we're seeing these days, is what Isaac Newton said. "Truth is ever to be found in simplicity and not in the multiplicity and confusion of things." In other words, let's keep it simple. Just look and you will see it when it's there. That's my sentence on the end there, not Isaac Newton's. So there's my piece of discussion here for this week and all about what the truths are and what they're not. And hopefully you got a little bit out of that in order to make sure that you are positioned correctly for any outcome. Now, if you're not, you don't know what to do, you're worried. You know what? That's why people come to us. We have several different strategies ranging from conservative to aggressive. We have our TDI managed risk strategy, which is the one that often in these types of volatility, we usually recommend to clients. If you haven't seen it yet, the managed growth strategy is a long-short strategy. We have some stocks. We have some mutual funds, ETFs at times. We hedge out. We have options. It's an aggressive strategy that's meant to be basically a long-short exposure. And right now, by the way, over the last month and change, we have really limited exposure. We dropped on July 31st, dropped that exposure down hard because we just were not seeing the numbers work out in terms of the fundamentals in our screens for our positions. And as such, we sidestepped a lot of that drama over the last few weeks. If you want to check it out, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's plenty of information on there. I would love to talk to you and see what's going on with you and answer any questions you have. There's no salesy stuff going on or anything like that. I'm not, you know, if you just want to talk about your portfolio, just get in touch with me. I'll be happy to do so. On a quick note before we go, I was going to get to some listener questions, but we're running a little bit over today. And, you know, we'd like to stay within that general time range of 45 minutes to an hour for the show. I want to mention, though, we'll get to those next week. If you do have a question, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, click on the Ask Andrew button, and ask away. Just ask away. We'll get right to it. I want to mention we have a really, I think, a pretty heavy calendar for economics over the next couple of weeks that are coming up, because it's not only here U.S.-wise, it's a global calendar that's really full. And some are saying that's one of the most important of the entire year. I don't really see it that way. I mean, we have, for example, some information on Tuesday coming from the Eurozone, and Wednesday we have the FOMC meeting minutes. Of course, that's important for the July 31st policy decision. Earnings are going to be out for a couple of different companies and like Target and all that, but we're going to have the PMIs for Europe starting on Thursday. And as we've seen that the manufacturing numbers have been slowing down so dramatically, the question is going to be, where are they going to bottom at this point? And then there's some other things going on. We have German IFO coming out, and we have durable goods. China industrial profits for July are going to be out the following Tuesday. Conference boards indicator is going to be coming out. And what else did I see that was here? GDP revisions on the 29th. So next couple of weeks, there's a bunch of things happening here, as well as into the end of the month, more information from China as well as Europe. So I think that we are going to see a pretty jam-packed week and probably a lot more talk about trade, of course. And we're going to see a lot more rhetoric from the Fed, I think, trying to do what they can to pull down the short end of the curve by more discussion about rate decreases. That's what they do. They're talking. So with that, hope you didn't get too tired of my discussion today. I think it's really important that we understand who we are and what everybody else is and how it affects us and how we see the world, how others see the world, and how that all combines into one giant, giant pot of, hey, okay, what's going on? It's a process to understand and not just sit by idly hoping and waiting. If we could save a little bit of fiscal pain from each other, I think it's a wise thing to do. So with that, I'm going to sign off today, and I look forward to seeing you next week with a great new guest that we have coming on board. And make sure to tell your friends and family. Check it all out on thedisciplinedinvestor.com as well. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.